my fellow plebs. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Moon Mortgage. As the world moves increasingly towards the mainstream adoption of Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage makes it possible to materialize your assets into real estate. Through the collateralization of mortgages with Bitcoin and other digital assets, Moon Mortgage will be launching lending solutions to allow investors to easily leverage their assets to purchase investments in owner-occupied property. Moon Mortgage's crypto mortgage will be launching soon for home buyers in Texas, Florida, and Colorado, and will also be open to investors in most states across the U.S. for investment properties. Welcome to the future of mortgages. Visit moonmortgage.com today to register and learn more. Moon Mortgage Residential is registered with the NMLS under number 235334. My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Gordon Law Group. If you've tried to do Bitcoin taxes yourself, you know how complicated it is. You can spend hours and hours going through your transactions and researching tax forms, and you're still not sure if it's right or if the IRS will come after you. Or maybe you're so intimidated by Bitcoin taxes that you don't even know where to start. Gordon Law Group can help. Ditch the spreadsheets and feel confident with a bulletproof Bitcoin tax return. They can help with IRS payment plans, and they also provide a full range of legal and accounting services for Bitcoin and digital asset startups. Get your taxes done right the first time with the original Bitcoin and digital asset tax pros. Go to GordonLawLTD.com/BTC. As a bonus, they'll send you the ultimate Bitcoin tax guide for free. That's GordonLawLTD.com/BTC.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of FedWatch. My name is Ansel Lindner, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, CK. How are you doing, CK?
I'm doing amazing, man. I like the development of the shells behind you, so it looks like you're building those yourselves, but it's looking pretty good.
Slowly but surely building out my office here, so yeah.
Love it. Yeah, so did you ever name the bull? What's the name of the bull?
No, nobody's come up with a good name for the bull yet, but if you guys have a name, put it down in the comments for sure.
Yeah, man, we got to name the bull. We're bullish. We're Bitcoin bulls. So maybe you can just be the Bitcoin bull. Y'all got a amazing show for everyone. Really excited about this one. And 7 days until the Bitcoin conference. Cannot wait to hang out with Ansel. We're just making plans to meet up before the event. And Ansel is going to be kicking off the live stream on the desk, breaking down everything that's going to be happening Thursday, first day of the event, and kind of anticipation of the Bitcoin conference weekend. Ansel, can't wait to see you there.
8 a.m. Thursday. I can't wait. That I'm going to be on the news desk opening up the conference. What an honor that will be. But yeah, so what are all the plans for the entire conference? Last time I think you were on, we went over like just the first day and it was about 10 minutes worth of stuff.
Oh man, I mean, it's just
what are the big highlights coming up?
So many highlights. I'm really excited for RFK. He seems to be a massive kind of curveball in the political environment. And just yesterday, it appears as though he has created a Nostr account via the influence of David Marcus, who is the CEO of Lightspark, who is also going to be at the conference. So I think there is a reason why a Bitcoin conference, which has a history of being like the first anti-lockdown event of 2021, is the first place that he is going to be speaking in public in, you know, at an event setting since his announcement for running for president. So I'm super excited for him. I'm also really excited for Michael Lewis. I'm really excited for Arthur Hayes. I'm really excited to get into what is happening with Bitcoin's blockchain. I think this is going to be one of the most timely events, and we have a ton of content that's just like super, super relevant to macro, super, super relevant to Bitcoin on chain, super, super relevant to the Bitcoin culture, which is always evolving. Yeah. And really awesome to be able to build such a dynamic event. We have something for everyone. I'm in the process right now of planning a Noster meetup inside the event. So that's cool. Going to be on Friday after the Noster content. So we're planning Noster meetups. We're planning startup and pitch days and, you know, job seeker meetups. We have a lot of awesome stuff, hundreds of different companies that are exhibiting and attending the event. And last year we had an amazing giant volcano, which was this cool totem that people were taking photos in front of. I think we are going to really surprise and get people super excited with what we have cooked up here for this year's event. We have a new totem in town, and I think the Bitcoiners are going to love it. It's going to be a great event. I can't wait to be there. 10,000, 11,000, 12,000 people, 13,000 people, all of that is in play. We could have thousands of Bitcoiners all descending upon Miami. We have, you know, probably 50, 60 plus side events on our website, but even more being planned. So a lot of good stuff.
Man, it sounds awesome. You'll have to tell me what that totem is offline here, CK.
Oh yeah, no, I can't spoil the secret. You're just going to have to see it in person. Man. You're special, Ansel, but
not that special.
Not that special.
All right. Well, today on FedWatch, we have a bunch of topics coming up. We're going to talk Bitcoin price and statistics. Of course, people know the network has experienced a big kind of, I don't know, disruption this in the last week. So we're going to take a look at some of those stats. US came out with CPI and PPI, the producer price index. So we're going to cover those things. The bank runs continue with PacWest. So we're going to take a look at what PacWest has filed with the SEC just yesterday, I believe. It might have been early this morning. And their stock is crashing once again. And the Chinese trade data. So we haven't talked about China here on the show for a while. So I thought I'd bring back some of their data, and they just released their trade import export data. So we're going to look at that. Overall, we have a big show. So if that sounds good, like, subscribe, wherever you're listening to this, comment down below. We're still having the Rumble YouTube battle, and those comments really do hit the algorithm. So it helps other people find the show. Other than that, for me, my plug up front is check out bitcoinandmarkets.com. That's my website, and doing tons of content, probably 7 to 10 pieces of content a week. So check that out.
Content. Ansel is an absolute machine, and he just gives us, you know, one show a week. And that's just like one of many, many pieces of content that he's producing. So one of the best analysts out there. I definitely highly recommend you check out what he does. And it's been a long time since you plugged it, but the Bitcoin Dictionary, still yes, a super awesome piece of content. You need to have it in your library. You need to read it. It'll help you understand what's happening in Bitcoin and finance. And this show helps you find out and understand what's happening in Bitcoin and in macro finance. So Ansel, let's get into it. We got a pretty jam-packed agenda here. So a lot to cover, ranging from the US, ranging from Bitcoin, ranging to China. So let's get into it.
All right. So producer Chris, slide number one, please. This is the Bitcoin chart. I have on here the 50-day moving average and the 200-day moving average. I also highlighted a kind of area that is support. It is breaking down a little bit here right now, but we will see. It's not shown on the chart, but on my premium newsletter that I publish on bitcoinandmarkets.com, I talk about a ton of different support levels between 25,000 and 27,000. So there is still a lot of places we can bounce on this chart, but overall it is dipping here a little bit. CK, any thoughts on the daily, or do you want to go the weekly?
Yeah, I mean, before we go, just looking at this chart, I think that this is the last level here before a breakdown to another level down. So we'll see what happens. But if you look historically, you know, just in the last few months, a large green candle has always been, preceded by a big red candle first. So maybe, you know, we're looking at another one of these slips down to another level of support and then a strong bounce off of it. We'll see.
All right. Yeah, we can see a little bit more of the structure of the price. If you go to the next slide, is the weekly chart. And again, the 50 and the 200 period. So this would be 50 and 200 week moving averages. Important here, in my opinion, is that the green 50 week moving average is actually turning back up. And every time in Bitcoin's history, when that happens, when the slope of the 50 week goes positive, that is the start of the next bull market. So very, very interesting here on the weekly. Also, you can see that.
Yeah, you should circle that right there.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you can see it.
Yep, it's starting to bend upwards. And also look above the price. I mean, it's just looks like blue skies up there. Once we can break through this last resistance at around 30, 31,000, my prediction is we see significantly higher prices, maybe right during the conference. So that'd be pretty awesome.
So we have a comment, big bear flag.
Big bear flag on what? The weekly here? I mean, I don't see the bear flag. You could have said that with the FTX. The FTX, like right before FTX crashed, I would say that, yeah, that looked like a bear flag. But now we're breaking up to new higher highs, you know, swing highs. So I don't see a bear flag.
You're still seeing higher highs and higher lows. I think that's the real key here is that trend hasn't broken down yet.
Correct. Yep, exactly. So that's my price charts. Now, there was a lot of disruption on the network, like I hinted at there at the beginning. The next chart is going to be, well, we can go to slide number 4 if we could, Chris, and that is the fees. So the fees actually broke the subsidy. And this is actually the fifth block in Bitcoin's history out of, you know, however many blocks we have now. What are we at? Like, are we at 300,000 yet or getting close, right? So no, we're way over that. 700 and some thousand.
Yeah, no, we're close to 800,000 blocks. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so out of all those blocks, we only have 5 where the fees are above the subsidy. And I think this is pretty significant. If we go to the next slide, number 5, this is the average fee paid for the blocks. And you can see that we did spike, but it has been coming back down. Now each block is averaging around 1 Bitcoin per block. So that's it. CK, any comments on the congestion that we've seen?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. This is such a decisive topic because this congestion is driven by BRC20 speculation and driven by the ordinals phenomenon on Bitcoin. You can, you know, just on this chart here, you can kind of see the evolution from, you know, just, you know, late April to today, that the constant increase in the fees. One, I would say is like, look, the future of Bitcoin is a future where the chain is completely packed and used to maximum economic potential. And we are in like the prehistory of Bitcoin right now. We are in the earliest days, the genesis days of Bitcoin. And every time we get little glimpses of that as a community and as a network and as a technology, we need to embrace that opportunity to build the infrastructure for the future. And a great example of that is the last real big fee spike was in 2017. It was painful. It was throughout a long period of time. And that is the reason we have Lightning today. Right. So that is critical infrastructure that is helping Bitcoin scale. That's a reason why, you know, people who were prepared and infrastructure that was built is allowing people to still utilize Bitcoin, even though we're going through a tough time right now. So the future of Bitcoin is not an empty, cheap blockchain. You know, it's going to be a lot of transactions. And the only way to scale that is human ingenuity and rubbing up against these edge cases and painful cases. So I think this is an opportunity for Bitcoin to grow. I think everything is good for Bitcoin. I firmly stand by that, although a lot of people don't agree with me on that. And then in terms of like, you know, ordinal shit coins, all that kind of stuff, you know, it's true. The best way to get rid of them is to price them out with usage outside of that. So it is what it is. You know, Bitcoin's just continuing to chug along. And this is absolutely a massive new dynamic. I think MEV is probably coming to the blockchain, and we need to figure out what that looks like too in Bitcoin. We'll see how it plays out in the next hype cycle. If there's hype right now, the next hype cycle could bring some fucking gnarly shit. So all I know is that miners are going to get paid, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, all good points there. And I want to bring up too that this addresses a very long-lasting critique in Bitcoin, maybe one of the first critiques in Bitcoin, and that's about long-term security of the network, and will fees be able to take over for the block subsidy? And of course, when this proves that is totally possible, the network didn't break down, but we had more fees than subsidy. So it kind of disproves that whole critique. And I think that's extremely positive for the long-term confidence in the system. So the big money that I think is going to be coming into Bitcoin sooner rather than later, they can see that and be like, okay, well, I see the long-term now security argument. I'm more confident to buy in. So what is your take on that, disproving that long-term critique?
Yeah, I mean, I think it matters. At the same time, it never was a real critique. It's always seemed like it's been this kind of straw man, because we know that there's like that was disproven in 2017. We have always known that we are very early on in the adoption, that there's very limited block space, and that if there is even a marginal increase in transactions and demand for Bitcoin blockchain usage, that fees are going to go up. And that, you know, if people go to and start using the Bitcoin blockchain beyond what is being used today, that and more people adopt it, that they're going to hit up against blockchain limits very, very quickly. So, yeah, I mean, we knew that this was going to happen. You know, personally, I only think in Bitcoin in binary. So it's either going, the incentives work and it's going to succeed, and therefore, like, people will use it and there will be a lot of fees, or the incentives break down, no one uses it, Bitcoin kills itself, and who cares? You know, at that point, like, it's not been adopted, it's not going to work, something else is being used, and Bitcoin will effectively kill itself. So, you know, this idea of like, oh, what will Bitcoin do? Like, are people going to use Bitcoin? It's like, well, if people use Bitcoin, it's going to be fine. And if people don't use Bitcoin, then who cares? Because people don't use it. And our thesis was wrong. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry to me.
Yeah, exactly. And every day that goes by, it adds more evidence towards it lasting and it being the thing that's going to work. So great points. Let's go to slide number 3 real quick. And this has to do with the price. And you can see here, I wish I had an attribution for this chart, but it's been floating around Twitter. And you can see that now the Bitcoin supply on exchanges is the lowest in almost 5 years or over 5 years now. So this is very interesting, especially considering that the total supply of Bitcoin is much higher than it was 5.5 years ago, but there's less Bitcoin on exchanges. Now, to me, this means that their price is going to be more volatile because there's going to be less liquidity on the exchanges. Are we in a volatile time where it's going to crash, or are we in a volatile time where it's going to spike and squeeze the shorts and stuff? I obviously think the latter. And so, yeah, CK, any comments on the supply of Bitcoin on exchanges?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously super bullish to kind of see this continue to happen. And I think as Bitcoin gets better to use and more necessary to use directly on chain, this will continue to happen. Something to think about is last time, you know, the Bitcoin was at, you know, on exchange was at this level, Bitcoin prices were much lower. So, you know, I think that that's a dynamic. And then beyond that, something to consider here that may invalidate these points altogether is which addresses are they using to query here? And is this measuring, you know, I'm assuming that this is measuring tradable Bitcoin rather than Bitcoin that is held with custodians. So I don't think that this is necessarily a proxy for self-custody, although generally, you know, if they're being Bitcoin are being withdrawn from exchanges, that does mean self-custody. But, you know, I'm not 100% sure if this is counting like Coinbase cold storage or Anchorage cold storage as part of this. I think this is more or less an indicator about how liquid is the market. So I expect this to continue. And, you know, ultimately, I think it's a bullish thing. And if there's going to be more volatility, I think that that's necessary for Bitcoin's future anyways, is we need more volatility. So it seems to be fitting the narrative.
Absolutely. All right. That's all the Bitcoin stuff I have. Should we roll into CPI and everything?
Let's do it. That's the end of any of my smart analysis. So once we get into CPI, it's all you, man. Let's go.
My fellow plebs, come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from Miami 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLive to get 10% off your tickets before prices go up. Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts, Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at bitcoinmagazinepro.com.
Okay, just to set up this first chart here is US CPI came out yesterday and it came in at 0.4% month over month. That was rounded up though from 0.36. So it actually missed month over month to the downside of forecast. Also the year over year number. So the the number was rounded up. So it's actually a little bit lower. So the year over year came in lower than expected. People thought it was going to come in at 5.0% and it came in at 4.9% year over year. So CPI continues to fall. I also want to mention before I talk about this chart is the shelter component has rolled over. And we looked at this last month. The shelter component went from a rate of 0.8% in February to 0.6% in March, and now April is 0.4%. So the most lagging indicator in the CPI has completely rolled over and is coming back down. So that is a very good sign that CPI will continue to fall. Now this chart is breaking down by the different components, the major components, and you can see energy has ticked now over the last 2 months has ticked down below zero. So that means it's contributing to decreasing of the CPI. The biggest one here, of course, is services, ex food and energy. That is also where shelter is at. So you see that blue is actually starting to tick back down again, which is important. Let's go to the next slide. This is just a further breaking down of this. You can see the rent is the dark blue and gasoline is in red. It has been negative. And the largest thing here is remaining contribution. So that's everything else. But I think these are fascinating visuals to see all the different components. But CK, what are your thoughts on these charts and what are your thoughts on CPI in general? Do you feel that it will continue to drop? Is it a big deal, you know, that it kind of undershot expectations, or what are you seeing?
I mean, we've been talking about this on the show and you have been forecasting this for a long time. So I would say continued vindication on the thesis. And yeah, we'll see what the Fed does. You know, we're seeing CPI going down. And is that accurate or reflect inflation? We're not making that comment. We're just saying the price of goods are going down. And that is one of the key indicators that the Fed is using. On top of that, banks are continuing to break. Shorts are feasting in the marketplace. And, you know, the Fed has continued to hike rates. So in the face of that, if you look back at previous financial crises, there's typically been signs of breakage, periods of time, and then like quote unquote catastrophe. Mm-hmm. So it feels like we're kind of in between the signs of breakage and then complete catastrophe right now. So we'll see what happens. I'm kind of curious what you think based on the movements in CPI and, you know, what is upon us, you know, Fed action. I know you've been saying pivot. Is that right upon us? Is that soon? You know, I think you've been directly correct, but Ansel, I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah. So just a slight correction there that these charts are, and the CPI is showing that we are in a disinflationary time, not an outright deflationary time yet, but yeah, the rate of price increases is slowing dramatically. Of course, Fed's target is 2%. When are we going to hit that? What I like to do is go back and look at 1 year prior. So that was April, May of 2022. What's going to be falling off next month and what is it going to be replaced with? And then what's going to fall off in June and what is that going to be replaced with? So if we still keep having these real small month over month changes, we're going to see the CPI crash. A lot of people are talking about even by July, we could be under 3% and maybe even by the end of the year, be at that zero bound for CPI. So be cracking into year over year deflation at that point. Yeah, I think this is, in my opinion, I've been talking that it's been transitory the whole time. A lot of people have high time preference and they say, oh, you know, 1.5 years, that's not transitory. Well, of course that it's transitory. We're not moving to a period of higher inflation for longer, in my opinion. And I think that has been shown out. We're going to take a look at PPI. And I think we have the same exact story being told by PPI. So CK, any response? I see you kind of smiling. You want to say something on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you sound like a Fed, and you know, why aren't you at the board of governors giving them their talking points? Because your talking points are better than theirs, because they conceded on transitory within months. Yeah. Within months, they conceded on it, and they just look—they totally lost the credibility game on that front. And I think they're going to continue to lose the credibility game with that. That's probably the biggest thing about CPI going down. Is that actually a credibility gain or a credibility loss for the Fed? Maybe it's a credibility gain because they've continued to raise rates.
Yeah, well, I've said that they don't have anything to lose by raising rates, because if they raise rates and the market crashes and there's some sort of recession, they can come out and say, oh, we're too all powerful. You know, we broke the market. And then people have confidence in this mythological power that the Fed has. And that's good for them. But what's bad for them is if they, you know, were hiking rates and inflation kept accelerating, or CPI kept accelerating higher, that would be bad for them. But let's go to PPI, because I think this paints an even more clear picture. And you can see the bars along the x-axis, though, that's the month over month. And then the blue line here is the year over year. And it's all the way back down to 2.3% year over year. And if this chart doesn't scream transitory, I don't know what does. So PPI, for those listening, it's an intermediate prices. So you have consumer prices. Those are like your retail end consumer prices. PPI is the producer price index. So that is what the stores are paying the wholesalers. It's kind of like a wholesale prices. And you can see that these are back down very near that Fed target of the long-term 2% year over year. They also say that PPI is leading of CPI, you know, because the producers will sell and buy their stuff before the consumers get it, maybe a month, 2-3 months out. So this, when people see this, they're like, okay, well, 3 months ahead of CPI, and 3 months from now, CPI will be back down to 2%. So anyway, any thoughts on this here, CK?
It's just such a drastic chart. So I think it makes your point pretty clearly. And, you know, and it looks back enough to just see how high it went, and then, you know, how high prices got, and then now them returning back.
Yeah. And I want to point out that every time after, you know, we roll over on CPI or PPI here, we do go negative. You can see that on the chart. So we will have some deflationary times, and maybe those are just around the corner. And how bad, you know, will it be an equal and opposite reaction down below to...
Ooh, that's scary to think about.
Right, right. So yeah, this again, this shows transitory nature of the prices to me. And that's all I have for CPI and PPI.
So before we get out of this, like what does that mean? Like, let's say equal and opposite, it goes real deflationary, you know, and we start seeing a lot of negative CPI. Like, what does that mean to people in their life experience who are living in the U.S.?
Well, it pretty much means that demand is going to be falling so far that people have to cut their prices just to sell anything. And so it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to buy stuff for cheaper. I mean, yes, if you have savings, dry powder that you can go out there and buy. But if you are in the economy, maybe you get laid off, right? The reason for demand falling is not because people have all this extra money to spend. The reason for demand falling is because they don't have the money to buy the stuff. So I would say that it means that there's going to be an increase in layoffs. You know, unemployment is going to spike. Prices are going to drop for the end consumer. What else? I don't know. Does that answer the question, CK?
No, I think it does. I just, you know, when you talk numbers, you say deflation, like, I think it's helpful to say like what that means in kind of like a common man's experience or in every man's experience.
Yeah. And I want to draw a distinction too, because a lot of people get this confused. I try to hone in on the money printing definition of inflation, right? And the definition then of deflation would be a contraction in the money supply. And a lot of people say, oh, deflation is not a bad thing, because everybody wants to spend less, you know, it costs less when you go to the store, and falling prices are good. Yeah, but prices aren't falling. I mean, first off, that's not deflation. Prices falling is not deflation. Deflation is a contraction in the money supply, but also that prices are falling because people can't pay. People can't afford that. They're not falling necessarily because of advances in technology. Sometimes they are over the long run, like we're talking decade to decade, prices will fall gradually due to that type of thing, but not from a quarter to quarter basis. You're not going to see a big increase in technology that causes prices to fall. That is the bad type of inflation when you have a, or sorry, deflation, when you have a deflationary shock. So I just want to draw that out a little bit for people. At least that's how I see it. Anything else here on the price index? Indices?
No, I appreciate you explaining that.
All right. So next story up is PacWest. PacWest is the next shoe to drop, perhaps. And this is a story here from CNBC, and I wanted to read through this a little bit. Let me pull this up on my side. So the headline for people listening later on the podcast version, PacWest shares tumble 20% after regional bank says deposits fell 9.5% in a week. That is some big time bank run right there. So the bank said in a securities filing on Thursday that its deposits declined 9.5% during the week of May 5th. PacWest said that the majority of those outflows came after media reports that said the bank was exploring strategic options. The bank also said that it was able to fund those withdrawals with available liquidity. PacWest said it now has $15 billion of available liquidity compared to $5 billion in uninsured deposits. Now, the point I want to make here is that this is liquidity that they have. That means they're not necessarily cash on hand, right? It is assets that they can borrow against. So they weren't really solvent. Okay. They have, you know, modern balance sheets. Your assets, you take those assets to go and trade them in at the Fed or into repo to get the dollars to pay the withdrawals. That's the modern bank. So when the government or the Fed and Powell stand up there in front of the, you know, at their press conference and say, oh, the banking system is sound, it is, except when people start withdrawing all of their deposits, because they have to take, those banks have to take that and go out in the repo market or go to the Fed's window, and maybe they can't get the rate they want, right? Maybe they say, oh, you need $1 billion and you have $1 billion in collateral. Well, you're a bad risk. So it's actually going to take $2 billion in collateral to borrow that $1 billion. And so that's how things snowball, because they can't, even though they have the assets there, they can't necessarily access the money to pay the withdrawals. So CK, any thoughts on what we're seeing here from PacWest?
I mean, I think this is the first time I've heard of PacWest, to be honest. So I think there's a bunch of regional, you've never heard of it, banks that you only know about if you live in that area. And they're probably all under. And it's just really, which one are the shorts going to gang up on next is the reality of it. And they're going to have a heyday. They're going to have a heyday.
It's where are the depositors going to flee? And that's one thing that PacWest was saying here.
It's a chicken before the egg thing too, as well. It's like the shorts pick a bank that start making headlines that drives more depositors. Like, they're probably all bleeding deposits, and then it just gets expedited.
Yeah, exactly. I had something else to say. Oh, yeah. And also PacWest here is blaming the bad headlines. So like you said, the bad headlines are coming out. And if we can go to the next slide, Chris, this is from their actual report, and I highlighted a few things. So they're talking about all these deposits fleeing, and they say, look, First Republic caused heightened market and consumer fears. PacWest entered the financial headlines, even though we're sound, and now there's a bank run on us, right? So they're blaming the headlines, and you hear that over and over again. And then at the bottom of this graphic here, I also highlighted how they accessed available on balance sheet liquidity, which is cash or cash equivalents that you can, you know, take to repo. And that's how they funded these things. So yeah. Any comments on that, CK?
Yeah. I can't wait for them to blame the speculators and for them to blame social media and them to blame the headlines. And in reality, the entire system was a house of cards. So guess what? When you have a house of cards and the wind blows, you're going to fall over, and it's not because the wind, it's because of your house of cards.
Yeah. I also saw a headline. Jamie Dimon is out there saying that they need to ban short selling, or like make short selling some sort of film, not short selling in general, but just of bank stocks.
Yep.
Short selling bank stocks.
Wild. It's crazy. That would pretty much be like a socialization, de facto socialization, is like not even people who want to put their you know, skin, you know, at risk, their money at risk to take a negative position. You can't even do that. He wants to prosecute short sellers, according to producer Chris.
Yeah, that's what he said. I mean, they've done this before. They banned short selling. They've frozen markets, right? And bank holidays. I mean, these are all market interventions that stop these type of bank runs. But the next chart is just a real quick chart of the PacWest stock. And you can see it's falling off a cliff back in around January of 2022. So that is how many months ago? About 17 months ago, almost 18 months ago, it was up at $50 a share, and now it's down at $5 a share. So it definitely looks like a shitcoin chart. Any comments, CK?
Shitcoin has fully entered the lexicon. Now you can see the just the contrast between Bitcoin and then the long tail of other assets is really starting to become prevalent, especially to Bitcoiners.
Yep.
Everything is a shitcoin except for Bitcoin. That is a hyperbolic thing that Bitcoiners have been saying for a long time, and it is turning into prophecy. That is what is happening. Everything is a shitcoin compared to Bitcoin.
All right. Well, moving right along here, I don't have any more charts other than, well, let's take a look at these two. I included them just in case we had some time to hit them, and I think we do. If we go to slide number 12, this is kind of related to the bank runs or the banking crisis, because this is an inversion chart. So it's the 10-year minus the 3-month yield. This is the one that Powell was telling us to look, watch the whole time. When the 2 and 10 inverted, he's like, oh, we don't watch the 2 and 10. We watch the 10-year, 3-month inversion. And when that's the one that's really important. And look at that chart. As far back in history that we can go on TradingView, it's nothing even close to this inversion on the 10-year minus the 3-month. And to me, this is signaling that, man, there's some sort of flight to safety. There's some sort of stink in the market that these people can smell. And all these regional bank failures are exactly what they're seeing. If we go to the next slide. Oh, do you have something to say on that one, CK?
No, I was like trying to look closer at the slide on my screen. No, but continue.
Okay, so the next one up is a abbreviated version of this rainbow chart that we've looked at quite a few times here. But what I wanted to show was the 1 month, the absolute crazy turnaround in the 1 month. It dipped all the way down there and was completely separating itself from other short-term treasury bills. And now it's spiked way high up above the Fed funds range while the 3 month and the 2 month are dipping. So a lot of people are saying that this most recent spike in the 1 month is due to the debt ceiling, and people are rotating out of the 1 month and into the 2 month and 3 month. That does seem to be what's going on here, but it doesn't look good when this is happening underneath the Fed funds target range. So CK, any comments on this?
Wild to see the 1 month. This system is very, very opaque and difficult to understand. Not even the high priest of fiat understand what's going on. And that's why I love comparing the actual rates across different spectrum of what's it called, time frames and the Fed funds rate. Do you have our normal chart, the one that shows the longer duration bonds in the deck as well or no?
No, I don't. I didn't include that one here, but the 10-year is selling off a little bit. Some of the longer dated bonds are selling off, but there is, interestingly, the 5-year has uninverted with the 10-year. So usually when we start to see the end or the end is nigh for some sort of market crash, you start seeing uninversions of things. And so the 10-year and 5-year has uninverted. And that might be the first kind of signal that we're getting towards the end of this cycle. That's all I have on the banking crisis and what we're seeing in the markets for yields and things. Next story up is China, unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, let's jump into China. Perfect timing.
All right. So this is from friend of the show, Jeff Schneider. And you can see this is the China export numbers. They came in negative, but less bad than last month. But overall, like, where is the China reopening story? I don't see it here. It's not at all in the charts. What did I have on my show notes? That's about it. But also I added this arrow in here to show, going back to the great financial crisis, it has trended downward. It was just during this COVID spike that they broke this overall trend since the Great Financial Crisis of lower exports. I also want to mention that this is all nominal, that these include the higher prices. So even with higher prices, they're still negative on the number of dollars that they earned in exports. So the volume obviously is way down. If we go to the next slide, this is the imports in dark gray. And then the black line is the World Bank Commodity Index. And so as the Chinese imports go, you know, their demand for commodities drives mostly this commodity index, the World Bank's Commodity Index. And look at how low it is. It is one of the lowest readings on record going back to the Great Financial Crisis. You can only say there's a couple periods that are similar to this. And yeah, so China is slowing down dramatically, which means commodities will slow down dramatically, which means CPI and PPI and all this stuff will slow down dramatically. So CK, any comments on the China data?
You've been saying that the China reopening is a nothing burger. We've been tracking that, you know, the exports out of China were dropping, that shipping rates are dropping. We've been saying that inflation, you've been saying specifically that it's transitory. I've been nodding my head and listening. And it seems as though more and more data is just confirming that that is the case. We on the show have been historically China bears when there's a lot of, let's say, people who think that, you know, China is going to lead to this BRICS revolution. So that's also something that I think is just continuing to be confirmed. And, you know, we've been very early on that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things that Jeff Schneider here has been talking about is if they have, you know, the imports actually were higher over the last, like the last year. You saw that. If you go back to the last chart there, Chris, slide number 14, you can see the exports spiked. And so that means that there's a lot of dollars coming in. So where did all those dollars go? Now there's supposedly a banking crisis in China, right? There's a dollar shortage over there in China, and their currency has not appreciated against the US dollar. So something's amiss here. We don't know. There's always speculation about the quality of the Chinese data, but I don't think that they would say they're negative if they weren't very, you know, really negative. So it could be much worse than this even, but we don't know. When I try to quality check this type of data, then I go to actual commodities charts, you know, and that we've been talking about oil a lot. The oil price is dropping, which means, hey, there's just this, even with OPEC cutting production, that just means that the global demand for oil is tanking. And so, you know, I think China, they're saying they're negative here, is directionally correct, but it could be actually a lot worse than this. Any comment on that, CK?
Yeah, I mean, well, I just want to say with the data stuff, like, yeah, my assumption with China is that they overstate good data and they nerf bad data. So if the data is bad, then they're nerfing it. And if the data is good, they're probably over-exaggerating it. So yeah, I love the idea of like looking at commodity. There's also been a thing called an index where they kind of try to understand the GDP of a place based on like the light that satellites pick up at night. Yeah. And none of those things confirm like the numbers that are coming out of China generally when it comes to economic success. So that's probably the case. And yeah, I mean, it's probably safe to assume that things are worse than the official numbers that are coming out. Y'all, I mean, I think we hit on a lot of stuff today. Again, I want to hammer on the drum that FedWatch is the only show in Bitcoin that really ties in all the things that we tie in. And it kind of has the thesis that it's Bitcoin versus the dollar, that this idea of like a multipolar world where some other fiat gains dominance or CBDCs gain dominance is not going to happen. And that ultimately we're in a crumbling old system and a flourishing new Bitcoin system. And that's what we try to track here on the show. So Ansel, yeah. I hope I represented the thesis of the show well there, but we have been talking about this thesis and with consistency and with Ansel's great forecasting in the medium and short term for probably 2.5 years now. So that's what you get on FedWatch. It's always great stuff. And I think we've been proven to be very accurate.
Yeah, I'll add onto that, that we have a vision, at least I have a vision of credit-based money. So the dollar isn't pure fiat. The dollar is backed by credit. Like we talked about the balance sheets of banks and their on balance sheet liquidity. What does that mean? And all that stuff. So money is credit. And when the Fed prints money,
money today is credit.
Correct. Money today is credit. And the battle is at the end of a credit cycle versus a new system. So Bitcoin is the new system that doesn't have counterparty risk, and it's replacing the old system that is at the end of a credit cycle and that it's crumbling. So yeah, I would flesh that out a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, hey, y'all, I think that's all that we have. Before we end it out, I just want to give a quick preview of the Bitcoin conference site, maybe talk about a few little elements there. So Chris, I don't know if you want to pull that up, but I got to do it. We are a week away. I can't wait to be there. TikTok next block. It's felt like that for 200 days now building this event. Let's just jump over to the speakers, because I'm really proud about the speakers that we have coming to this conference. Patience while it loads, you know, really excited about RFK and Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, obviously Michael Saylor, huge, huge in the Bitcoin space. Arthur Hayes is one of my favorites here just because he's probably been one of the best writers out there. And a very good analyst, a very interesting analyst, yeah. Very entertaining writer. And I think he's going to create a lot of really entertaining content. And then I think, you know, capping it off with Zoltan, Tulsi, Eric, very, very exciting, you know, kind of like outsiders coming into the Bitcoin space. David Marcus, you know, he may be the man who helped get RFK onto Nostr. And if that's the case, be very, very interesting to see the kind of advising he is giving RFK regarding Bitcoin and Lightning. You know, obviously he started Lightspark, which is his own Lightning infrastructure company. Adam Back, Ridwan Kamil, who I think is going to be, has the high road to becoming the next president of Indonesia and is obviously coming to the Bitcoin conference for a reason. You know,
wow. Matt
Mahlers is going to try to one up his previous announcements, which, you know, obviously are not going to be easy to do. Cynthia Lummis, Patrick McHenry, Lynn Alden, favorite, Elizabeth Stark. You know, we're just running through some of the best names. Of course, Bitcoin Magazine's very own Dylan LeClaire, Bill Miller IV, Saifedean Ammous is just doing so much at the event. He's selling his book. He's signing his book. He's speaking in private to the VIPs. He's speaking on the main stage. You know, just those are just some of the headline speakers. There's so many more awesome speakers. You know, Chris is now showing you the floor map, but like this event, the production value is absolutely spectacular. You walk into the Miami Beach Convention Center, you're greeted, you register in the lobby, you go over to the left, we have our mining stage right in front of the main stage, which is absolutely huge. You go over to the right in the green, that's the enterprise stage. Sorry, I mixed it up. The blue is the enterprise stage. The green is the mining stage. You enter into a massive expo hall on the right, which is just mining museum, news desk, art gallery, the Bitcoin games arena, cafeteria, so much going on. You go upstairs to D, where you see here, that's the open source stage and the open source lounge with the cash bar. Like this is literally Bitcoin Disneyland. I you know, it is a theme park for Bitcoining. All the Bitcoiners that you want to meet are going to be there. And, you know, I'd be remiss to not speak about our incredible backstage experience here. You know, P&M, you see here for all the VIPs, for all the speakers, including you, Ansel, you get to go hang out backstage with the most important people and the builders in the space. So, you know, I'm really excited about this event. Really love this floor plan too, and think it's going to be fantastic. Chris is reminding me, BM Live, code BM Live, save 10% off your ticket. Ticket prices go up this Friday. So you're already in FOMOing in territory at this point. Next week, ticket prices go up again right before doors open. So don't be one of those 1,000+ people who eventually buys a ticket at the door. That happened last year. Last year, we had thousands of people buy the ticket after the event already started. Don't be one of those people. Don't be one of those people who don't buy a ticket in time, who FOMOs at the most, like the highest bit price for a ticket. So keep an eye out. BM Live, all one word, save 10%. Buy your ticket today. I can't wait. Ansel, can't wait to see you. And, you know, obviously there will be no show next week, but there will be a 3-day live stream starting Thursday, Friday, and Saturday on Bitcoin Magazine, YouTube, and Rumble. So tune into that. It's going to be happening all day. All the best content. Ansel and me on the live desk. So can't wait for it.
Yeah. Wow. That it looks like there's a few changes on the floor plan from last year. It just looks even bigger and better than last time. And can't wait, man. Less than a week. I'll see you down there in Miami.
Let's do it. All right, y'all. Can't wait to see each and every one of you as well. Peace.
What is up, audio listeners? Thank you for enjoying another episode of FedWatch. Down in the show notes, you will find all the appropriate links to our social media, the original version of this podcast, and community links. Also, check out bitcoinandmarkets.com, where I put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday. And there you can also help support the show by signing up to become a paid member. See you next time.
My fellow plebs, come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from Miami 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLive to get 10% off your tickets before prices go up. Plebs, if you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, then you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's a free and a paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts Dylan LeClaire, Dr. Jeff Ross, and Sam Rule break down what's going on in the market so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.